You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Lisa Wysocki. I'm in Ashland City, Tennessee.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, January 21st, episode 3867, brought to you today by Chewy. Good morning, horse people. Oh my gosh, we have it coming. Lisa, it's coming.
The Arctic
invasion is arriving Friday.
Snowmageddon.
Oh my gosh. The totals were like, you're going to get a dusting to like, everybody's going to die. I mean, my God, what are they saying for Tennessee?
Well, I just got an alert on my phone that we're supposed to get 20 to 25 inches.
Oh, no, no.
So I'm like, really? I'm from Minnesota and that's still mind boggling.
Yeah, no, that's not okay. I mean, yesterday for us was, thank God we know plenty of time out so you can prep for it, because you guys know that prepping for storms for normal people is hard, but add in livestock. Oh my God. Like
days.
I'm having to get the tubs out, the heat water is ready, fill everything up, get the electric cords, everything. It's just so much. I had to go to the feed store, buy all the bedding. I've got to redo the stalls. It's so much.
There is so much. I know. And, you know, here in Tennessee, I don't know about there in Oklahoma, we don't have the snowplow equipment that we really need for something like this. So I'm planning to be snowbound here at the farm for 4 or 5 days. Easily.
Oh, yeah. Guess where I'm going today? Costco.
Where? Oh, yeah.
I'm going to get all the things that all I will need, because I cannot imagine leaving this house for those several days. I had to walk out and freeze to death and feed livestock. Like, that's what we do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know about there, but here it's not supposed to get above freezing until maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. So this is going to be with us for a little bit. And, you know, I'm going to make sure the tractor starts. I'm going to make sure I got a lot of diesel fuel and, you know, hopefully I can scrape the driveway with the bucket on the tractor, but we'll see.
Well, I have my little Beetle, which is a diesel.
Yes, and
it's
I love
all
it.
My SpongeBob decals all over and everything. And I was like, oh my God, like all that snow is going to ruin all my decals. So I bought a car cover, which arrived from Amazon yesterday.
So awesome.
My SpongeBob decals will be safe. I will make sure they are. Hey, speaking of things going on and coming, how is the book, movie, everything? What's happening in your world?
You know, Jamie, I'm just now starting to get excited because this is definitely happening. I mean, not that it wasn't definitely happening, but it's getting closer. We're filming in Lexington in May. The first Cat Enright book called The Opium Equation is being turned into a movie. And so we are going to be looking for some extras. So we need people for a couple of restaurant scenes and for a press conference scene. So if anybody wants to be in a movie as an extra, there's no pay for that, but a lot of fun and some good food, you know, just email me. It's lisawysocki.com, W-Y-S-O-C-K-Y at gmail.com. Sorry, lisawysocki@gmail.com. And I will forward it to the producer who's working on casting, and love to have some auditors, you know, in the film. That'd be so cool.
How fun.
Yeah. Yes. And we, you know, we have 4 Appaloosa horses that we're casting. We've got finalists on 3 of them. But if anybody knows of a yearling or smaller 2-year-old red roan or chestnut Appaloosa filly or gelding, we can shoot, you know, to avoid the little boy parts.
You make it.
Near the Lexington area, let me know.
That's so cool. So excited.
So we're casting humans sometime next month. And I don't have a whole lot to say over that part of it, but it's just exciting. You know,
are there any names you can drop as far as like,
no, not
casting?
Yet, but maybe by next month. So I'm hoping, you know, to be able to announce some of the horses fairly soon. A couple of them I've got to go up and look at. And of course, you know, with all the snow coming in, that's not going to happen for a bit. hopefully soon we'll be able to introduce some of the horses. And it's just super exciting at this point.
Well, this success could not happen to a nicer person. For those of you listening, this is one of the nicest women on the planet. So
thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. And of course, we're doing a Horses in the Morning thing where our Kat Enright is going to be listening to you and Glenn on the radio.
I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I'm excited about it. Love it.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right. Well, let's get some Daily Winnies done.
So we've got some birthdays today, Cheryl Rings and Kaylin Schildmeier, and hopefully I got those pronunciations correct.
Happy birthday. Than Glenn would have done.
You know, coming from Minnesota, we've got a lot of those German names up there. So I went to school with a Schildmeier.
Oh my gosh. Today's the day. Lisa, today's the day.
What day? I'm so intrigued.
So I talked about it in the post show last week.
Yeah. Now I have an idea.
In the theme of we are marching towards death and why you can't take it with you. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
I am now, they start framing my covered round pin.
I'm so excited.
You know, it's hard because I've had to stop taking horses in July and like January, February, because the weather in the winter, we have north wind that just Oklahoma, the wind comes sweeping on the plain. It's like a real thing.
It's a real thing.
The north wind comes in the winter and it is like Arctic air. And so that comes in. Now, the south wind is a warmer wind, but it can be pretty strong too. But what I did, you guys, I have a 60-foot round pin. So I also can't teach clinics any other time than like wishing and hoping October is going to be nice because that's like the nicest month here.
Yeah.
This way, what I did is I have a 60-foot round pin, which is great. And it's solid walls and it helps with the wind a little bit, but not north wind. So this will be a 60 by 70 foot building. So there'll be 10 feet off to the side for all the people taking the clinic to be able to stand.
And we'll have
a solid north wall. So it's like basically an indoor.
Jamie, like, this is so exciting.
I'm super excited and it's going to match my barn and it's going to be right next to it. And then typically my round pen open, I have doors that open into the arena. So like when you're starting a horse and you want to make things a little bigger and a little bigger, you can open those doors. So my solid north wall will have a slide up garage door on it too. So I can like still use the doors. I'm so excited. Like the builder that I've had is so great. And oddly enough, it's my veterinarian's husband who does all these things. So keeping it in the family.
This is so exciting. And not to take any of your thunder away, but we here at Colby's Army are getting a covered arena next month.
Whatever. I'm just trying to keep up with you. Okay.
I'm just so excited because I can so totally relate to you being weather dependent for your clinics. You know, you have to drop back and punt sometimes and hopefully not cancel, but this is so exciting. And I'm so excited about the garage door. That's so cool.
Oh my gosh. And how cool you're going to be able to teach lessons to the kids and all the people that need it all year long and not have to make those awful phone calls, which is like,
I know.
It's raining tonight. Can't do
Plus we can expand our yard sale. So I'm so excited.
Yay. You'll have a huge yard sale now. Well, and covered.
It'll be covered. Yes. No more tents. So very excited.
That's awesome. I'm super excited for you.
I'm excited for you. I want to see pictures.
I will keep you posted. What's really cool is they'll get the framing done and then we're going to have an Arctic invasion. So I don't think it'll be done by Friday. Now I have a question for you because you've had so many horses come and go. Have you ever had a cribber? I have talked to the people listening to the show enough about the cribbing.
Yeah.
I've got things that have to happen. Have you had a cribber?
We have a cribber now and we've had him for 15 years. So, you know, you make so many accommodations and Jamie, we have tried everything. We've tried all the things, everything we can think of. We have tried. And the second we take that cribbing collar off within 10 minutes, he is cribbing. So we have T-post and wire fences because of that. Well, partially because of that. So he can't find things to crib on very easily. And he was a show horse and he was stalled before we got him. And he just got bored and, you know, developed the habit. And we just have not been able to get him past it. It's tragic.
It's just creepy. The noise is creepy. It just seems gross. And I just mm-hmm. can't stand it. And this horse that I bought, sight unseen, you guys don't do that. It kicks me in the ass every
time. And
this
is like your 14th horse you've bought sight unseen?
I think I'm typically good at it, but people, when they lie to me, you cannot get around somebody lying.
True.
So what I did was I contacted the person yesterday who was kind of the negotiator between the trainer and me. And so I messaged her and I was like, hey, just so you know, this horse is, I'm trying to find the, hold on, let me check it out here because, okay, here it is. I was super nice. And I was like, hi, your trainer told me that this horse chewed wood one time. Cause that's what he said. And I was like, chewed wood one time? What does that mean? He chewed wood one time. Did he suck air when he chewed wood? No. And so, of course, there's no way anybody could miss this cribber. Like,
right.
I mean, he is hardcore. Even with the collar on, he figures out a way to crib so high. Like, he goes to the very top of the post and cribs on those. So the collar doesn't do anything.
Oh.
So I said, I messaged. I'm like, your trainer told me that he did not crib or he did not suck wood. And
yeah.
I'm like, this is the worst cribber I've ever seen. I can't keep him here. I have foals, other thoroughbreds, because the foals pick it up really, really
quick. Yeah.
So yes. Butters, I can't put him out with butters. And I'm also down paddocks because I've got this people building this covered. I'm like, I'm so frazzled right now. And like, let's add an Arctic invasion to all the fun.
Of course.
And she's like, I've never laid eyes on this horse. I'm not the owner. I just market horses for people, blah, blah, blah. He must have not told me the truth. And I said, if you were marketing them, shouldn't they disclose that to you? Yes, a well-meaning person would typically inform me of any habits for listening purpose, but not everybody's honest. So I wrote back, well, then, well-meaning people marketing horses should make this right.
Yes, that's where I was going in my mind.
It's her reputation. She didn't care. And so she just gave me his number. And of course, he's not responding to anything that I have. So I might have found, because Lisa, this is the most beautiful horse I've ever owned.
Oh,
I mean,
well, that makes it even harder.
It's so hard because I stare at him and I'm like, I love you so much. But then I'm like, oh my God, I hate you so much. Like, it's like a mixed thing for me. And there are people that don't care. There are people that deal with cribbers.
Yeah.
So I put him back online and I had somebody message me. I got to talk to my husband. He is my dream horse. We have two other cribbers here. We don't care because, of course, I'm going to be honest because I'm going to end this cycle
well,
of
sure.
BS. So I said that and fingers crossed, hopefully this has a happy ending because, oh my God. I can't take it.
No, it's a lot. It really is. And you're right on the younger horses picking it up. And, you know, and then there's damage to, you know, your fence posts unless you cover them in titanium. I don't know what else to
do. You crib on titanium too. Now,
probably.
Jen, I hear you laughing in the background. What is your experience in this?
I have only had a very few cribbers over the years and none recently. But the little bit of research that has been done, proper research, not studies show.
That, yeah, right.
Like real stuff.
Yeah,
real stuff. It really is a proper stereotypy in that they start cribbing and it actually alters their brain chemistry and they're not going to stop.
Yeah.
Because it has altered their brain
yeah.
chemistry.
And this horse is six. Yeah, it's
yeah,
not going
they,
away.
They did a study 2020-ish. At Midwestern University College of Veterinary Medicine, I finally found the article I had read, and they gave the horses in this research antidepressant Prozac, and it did change the behavior. So the problem is any medication that changes the behavior is 120% illegal in any competition venue.
True.
So therefore, the research really didn't go anywhere, right? But people who say it's just a nervous habit, oh, they'll get it changes
no.
their brain chemistry. Once they've been doing it for a while, you're not going to change their brain chemistry back.
But But how many people have cribbers who don't compete and don't care if it's illegal or
right.
not?
Right. It would be lovely to see more research into that. But yeah. I think the financial reward, if you will, for doing that research isn't there, because so many people, even if they don't compete, are not going to go down that road. But it would be nice if veterinarians had more ammunition, because
yes.
frankly, giving your horse Prozac once a day or whatever it is sounds like a much more reasonable solution than sticking chunks of metal in their gums or putting collars
yes.
around their necks that, if not monitored properly, can cause issues themselves.
Yes.
And that's the thing, is everybody was like, just turn him out in a big pasture, he won't crib. And I'm like, BS, we got oak trees. He's over there cribbing on the oak trees in 20 acres.
Yeah.
Then
some, yeah. horse, gave him- some horses, it's just so ingrained, they literally cannot stop.
Mm-hmm. I did the whole dose of Gastrogard, which you guys know how fun that is expense wise.
Yes.
And so I did Google how many Prozacs would a 1200 pound horse need. And this is what AI told me. Information on administering Prozac to a horse of a specific weight should only come from a qualified veterinary professional.
Hey, AI, so, got it right.
Yeah. Book somebody.
Unreal.
AI got it right. Wow.
Yes. And you had mentioned in joking earlier that, Lisa, that you can just cover your fence posts with metal.
Yeah.
A friend of ours did that. They had brought their own little place. They were so excited. The stalls, beautiful stalls, they had a cribber. So they made sure every single surface had proper angle iron on it. Sturdy, horse is not going to crib through that. Time goes by. The horse is not monitored on a daily basis for a year and a half or so. He's well cared for. He's fed. Everybody's
right.
responsible, but nobody's going in there putting bridle on him, riding him. He's kind of vacationing. The horse comes to me because the horse needs to be rehomed because of things outside of their control. And he's a little thin. I'm like, oh, that's odd. I know this horse really, really well. He's a super easy keeper. And he's just a little bit light. He needs to gain about 200 pounds. And I pry open his mouth and he has literally no molars.
Oh.
None. Zero. And the horse was living on pasture that was 6 inches deep, but he couldn't eat it.
Yeah.
So if you're going to use that route, really keep an eye on things.
You know what? They're going to lose their dang teeth anyway. Jeez.
If they're like James, they're going to stick their mouth onto something they shouldn't, like a cross tie, and get their tooth caught in the snap on the cross tie and then yank really hard. And then what happens to their tooth?
Oh, that sounds just so painful.
That's fun. The horses, we're going to talk to a woman who has an art gallery for horses in just a second. And I think that the title of her art gallery should be Pictures of Horses Not Trying to Die. The rest of the time they're trying to die. Unbelievable. Well, hey, let's hear from our title sponsor. You can trust Chewy with the dogs and cats in your house and see how Chewy can help you care for all the horses in your barn. Does Chewy sell Prozac, Jen? Look that up. Chewy brings you trusted brands like Purina, Farnam, Cosequin, Weatherbeta, and hundreds more delivered straight to you. From feed and supplements to seasonal care and prescriptions, Chewy makes life with horses easier with fast shipping and everything you need at your fingertips. Buy it once or put it on auto ship to keep the essentials arriving right on time. Shop now at chewy.com/equine. And then, Jen, did I hear that you're using the Chewy Pharmacy?
Yes, I'm using the Chewy Pharmacy. They carry the Apoquel that Scooter is taking for his allergies. And yes, they do have Prozac.
Oh my gosh.
Ooh.
Calling my vet. We're not competing anytime soon. It'll be fine.
Super easy interface. The veterinarian prescribed it. She put it into her computer. And by the way, she said that's the easiest interface they use for pharmaceuticals at their clinic. They have several of them that they use for different customers. She said Chewy's the easiest for them too. So can't recommend it enough. Love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, let's hear from our first guest. We're going to talk to Juliet Harrison, the founder and owner of Equus Art Gallery. And one of our listeners might have some art in that gallery.
Well, we're happy to welcome Juliet Harrison. She's a fine art photographer, author, and the founder of the Equus Art Gallery, which I think is probably one of the only art galleries specifically dedicated to horses anywhere in the country. So, Juliet, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you're in Red Hook, New York. How did you get the idea for doing an art gallery just dedicated to horses and horse art?
First, let me just say that I was the first contemporary equine art gallery, but I'm not the only horse art gallery, because there's certainly others, but they're more traditional than I am. That's
good to know.
First. So I was a fine art photographer for many, many years, still do a lot of that, but I focused on the horse as my subject for about 20 years in black and white film photography. I did that for a long time, and through my own work, I met a lot of these amazing artists who also represent the horse, but who don't necessarily get full-time representation by art galleries because their work isn't necessarily horse and hound, English hunt side, cowboy art, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to give them a place to showcase their work.
Well, I think it's amazing. And, you know, I've been on your website. It's equusart.com. And I was just really astounded by the various quality, not various quality, but various styles of art. I mean, there's humorous things and there's serious things and there's more impressionistic things. And I'm not an art person per se, so I'm probably not using the right words, but it's such a wide variety of horse art and photography. What makes you either want to represent somebody or to have a specific piece of art in your gallery?
So the bottom line on all that is, and I tell this with a bit of humor, is everything that's in the gallery, I would want to hang in my own home. So
I can see that.
It's all my aesthetic. It's all what I like. And I don't tend to be drawn to very traditional subject matters. I don't tend to be drawn to, you know, the overly romanticized view of the horse. I really am a horse lover. Bottom line, and it's not just about how beautiful they are, which they are, but also about all the incredible qualities that a horse embodies. Just as a side note, or maybe it's not a side note, the horse is the oldest subject in art, second only to the human form.
Oh, that's so very interesting.
Historically, from cave paintings on up, the horse is represented in every era and every culture where there were horses.
And that just shows how important the horse has been to human development.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, go ahead.
On. Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, people come in and ask me why the horse all the time. And I say, without our partnership with the horse, humans would not have evolved the way we have.
Absolutely.
We would not have agriculture, transportation, or unfortunately war, if it were not the way we do, if it were not for our partnership with the horse.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I've found kind of interesting about you is that you rode as a child and then resumed riding when you were, you know, an adult in your 40s. And I think a lot of people listening maybe have had that scenario.
Yeah.
So what brought you back to horses?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't think I never lost the love of horses. I mean, I can trace it back to the time I was 5 years old, and my babysitter gave me a little book on the breeds of horses around the world, and I just pored over that book. So I rode primarily from the age of 10 on up. I went to riding camp and as a riding school near where I lived, but I never owned a horse. But I never lost my fascination or my love of horses. It's always been a part of me and feels like it's always been connected to me. But I didn't have an opportunity. I lived on Long Island. I lived in New York City. I went to graduate school. There were no places that connected me to riding horses mm-hmm. at that point until my husband and I moved to Red Hook, where we are now, which is 100 miles north of New York City in the Hudson River Valley. And I was working full time. I'd had a child. And I wanted to give him an opportunity to have riding lessons. He was five. I brought him to a barn. He fell in love with it. But the moment that it got cold and that he had to go off the lunch line, he said, "Nah, I don't want to do this anymore." So I thought, wait a minute. I'm giving him something. I want to do it again.
Right, right.
Why can't I give that back to myself? So at 40, I started taking riding lessons. At 43, I bought my first horse.
Oh, I think that's just such a great story. And, you know, in looking at the art that's on your website, you know, all of the horses are just so, I guess, anatomically or conformationally correct. Yes. for whatever piece it is. Do you find that as a rider that helps you choose art or even develop your own art as a photographer?
Absolutely. One of the important things to me, and even in the most abstracted work, and I certainly have it here in the gallery, it is incredibly important to me that the artists that I represent are horse people, and that mm-hmm. they absolutely not only know the anatomy of the horse, they know what it feels like under their hand. They know what it looks like if they're watching the horse in a field or watching their horse to see if they're moving correctly. They also No, and I always say this, a piece of artwork, like a photograph, is a moment in time captured. It's that particular moment. But I hope that what people can see in these pieces of art is what led to that moment and what might happen next, that these artists know that and represent.
Yeah, it's thought-provoking is the way I kind of look at it. You know, you look at something and it catches your eye because you think, okay, what led to that moment? And then what as you said, what's happening next? And, you know, you can build a whole story around a photograph or a piece of art.
Where will that ear turn? Will the tail lift? What hoof will move? Absolutely. Yeah. And truthfully, you know, this gallery is about the horse. It's not about the sport or riding discipline or the rider. It is really about the horse. And again, the artists that I represent, of which there's 30, they are horse people. They're riders, they're breeders, they're trainers, they're people who've been around horses their whole lives. And so they are representing their love as well.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing too is in looking at the art is that it seems that you have a lot of different kinds of mediums of art. There's photography and it looks like there's oil paintings and maybe some watercolors and things. So do you have a personal preference? I mean, I know you are a photographer, but when you're choosing art, do you have a preference?
You know, not so much. Although I will say that because I think it's one of the most difficult mediums, I don't have a lot of watercolor in the gallery. I think it's very difficult to do it really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I love all the mediums that are here. I love oil painting. I love acrylic. I love mixed media. I love when people just, I have one artist that does the most amazing photorealistic graphite pencil drawings. And I am an artist. I am fascinated and have been fascinated by art by my whole life. So as long as it's done really well, then it really, I'm happy to have all the mediums I can here, including sculpture.
That's fabulous. So, Juliet, so if I'm looking at your website, can I buy like directly from the website, or do I need to make a trip to New York?
You do not have to make a trip to New York. You cannot pay for something through the website, but it's easy. People will just contact me, email me, call me on the phone, and I arrange the purchase, and I've shipped all over the world.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And then
50% of what I sell online and again, ship out of the gallery.
I was going to ask about that. And do you have everything that's in the gallery online?
Yes. Well, no. I have everything that's represented by the artists that I represent online. I do have some vintage items, equestriana, I would call it, in the gallery. That's not all online. I do also carry, not everyone who walks in the door. I'm right on a nice small town, busy street. Not everyone who walks in the door is in love with horses. So I have other animals I represent, mostly livestock, a couple wild animals, but I also carry vintage Native American jewelry, carvings, pottery, as well as my own work, which is at this point, I do have my photography, which is equine based in the gallery, but I also do assemblage sculpture. And it's how I keep myself busy on quiet days in the gallery. And that's on a separate website.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Actually,
yeah, it is. But all the represented art is definitely on the website.
Fabulous. Well, Juliet, tell us again how people can find you online.
Mm-hmm. So the website is www.equisart.com. And that's how you can find the website. But I'm also pretty active as the Equus Art Gallery on Facebook and on Instagram.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Everybody, I hope you go check it out because I'm just lost in looking at all of this beautiful art website. I want to take it all home with me. So, Juliet, thank you so much for coming on.
One tiny thing I'd love to mention
sure.
is the wonderful artist, Kelly Moore, who recommended that and contacted Glenn and recommended that I talk to you guys. She is one of the newer artists in my gallery. And if you go on the website and look at her work in and of itself exhibits a range of styles, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, Kelly, thank you, because I'm going to spend the rest of my morning looking at art, I think.
Oh, and remember, as they say, if you see a piece of art and it speaks to you, if you purchase it, you can have that conversation every day.
Well, Lisa, I think that this next segment is very fitting considering what we're about to all go through. And we are going to talk to Dr. Brian Waldridge about frostbite in horses. It's sad that this is what we're going to have to talk about, but we talked to him back in 2021 on frostbite. So I thought it would be a good time to replay this one. So let's take a listen.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report. When our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products. And now, let's chat with Dr. Brian Waldridge about frostbite. And here I am with Dr. Brian Waldridge, known by a lot of the horse world as Dr. B's Bluegrass on Facebook, a veterinarian from Central Kentucky who has this really cool Facebook page that he puts all kinds of interesting posts on about his many adventures there in Kentucky as a horse vet. Welcome back to the show, Dr. B.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for asking me.
Today, as we record this, the entire United States seems to be well and truly frozen. So I thought it might be timely to chat a little bit about frostbite, because horses can get frostbite too. So maybe we should start with, what is frostbite?
So frostbite is really the effects on the body, and usually it's the extremities. So the places we worry about are the ears and the feet and occasionally the tail. The extremities of the body where there's less blood flow, so those spots are more sensitive to cold damage. And when cold damage occurs, it can both actually freeze those cells, but also it damages the blood vessels. So there's less blood flow to those areas. And that's why sometimes when you have a sequela of frostbite, that you'll see skin sloughage and changing colors of the skin where it looks like a burn turns blue or turns black.
So is frostbite literally frozen? So if a horse or a human, for that matter, has frostbite on the tip of their ear, is that actually a frozen ear, or is it a little more complex than that?
It can be truly frozen. You know, if the blood flow is compromised to the point that blood can no longer go to that area, then it will go ahead and freeze, because the blood's going to be our way to warm that tissue. So in the worst case, or we have the damage to the blood vessel and the tissue becomes devitalized or dies, then that can go ahead and freeze. So, you know, less degrees of frostbite, but the ones we want to have is maybe where there's just some cold damage and we warm those tissues up. It may be red and painful for a few days, but goes away. And the bad end of the spectrum would be no blood flow and dead tissue that's eventually going to slough off.
Ew, this would be yucky. Okay, that's step one. Now, step two, obviously, horses don't get frostbite all the time. Horses live in all parts of the country, all over the world, where it gets really, 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 really cold. So under what circumstances would a horse be at risk for frostbite?
You know, to me, and this thing I always talk to clients, because we've gotten a lot of calls on this because it's really cold in Kentucky right now, is we worry about what's the horse's overall body condition. You know, because really those pretty young, good body condition horses, you don't tend to see it as much in. So if they have good body condition, they're less likely to get frostbite, although that's not always true. And then do we have conditions that make the horse more likely to have cold stress? So really the two big ones in that is wind, because we all know about, you know, when they're doing the weather report telling you what the wind chill is. I don't even listen to that anymore in Kentucky because it's always terrible. But what's the wind chill going to be? And then things like getting wet, because, you know, you get wet, you get colder because you've got wet. So now you get more heat loss. So, you know, if horses have a wind block in a spot they can get out of the rain or the snow, then they're less likely to show those signs. And, you know, as a rule, but not always true, you know, if they're a kind of a younger, healthier horse and they've had time to adapt to that change in weather, you know, the horse has been in the cold area for quite a while and, you know, had time for the season to gradually change, then those tend to do all right. You know, if we took a horse from California and dropped them right in the middle of Kentucky right now, they're definitely going to show cold stress.
So cold stress, and this is something that I used to struggle with a lot back in the day when I took care of lots of other people's horses. A horse is designed, and humans are too, actually. Mammals are designed so that as Mother Nature's seasons change, they change relatively gradually, and their body adjusts to it so that in the middle of summer, when the average daytime temperature is 85 degrees, if you pick that horse up and magically drop him someplace else where the average daytime temperature is 40, that horse is going to experience cold stress because his body has not had the chance to adjust to it, versus that same horse could live in a place where in the summertime it's 80 degrees on average in the summer. And then in the winter, the average temperature is 12 degrees. And that horse will be just fine because he's experiencing the seasonal change and his body is hardwired to make those adjustments.
Right. They've had time to adapt to it. And a hair coat is...
That's part of it.
greatly, greatly more influenced by, right, it's greatly influenced by duration of light in the day. So that's the biggest contributor to it. But also, if they're in cold, they're going to tend to grow a heavier hair coat. But so they may not have as good a coat, neglecting the effects that decreasing sunlight would have, which should trigger a heavier hair coat.
Right. And then you have the effect of, I just watched this on Mythbusters the other day. When the body gets cold, whether it's a human or a horse, the body will reduce circulation to the extremities in order to preserve core body temperature so that they don't become hypothermic, thus contributing to poor circulation in the extremities, which keeps them even colder.
Right.
But
right.
Your horse can't put on mittens.
That's one of the frostbite things. No, they can't. No, and although if they had those in the horse catalogs, they would wear them.
They would sell. Yeah, I would buy some. Absolutely. So, say we're having a cold snap, or you have a horse in that you think might be at risk. Maybe he's older, not so prone to moving around and keeping himself warm. Doesn't particularly care for eating lots of hay and all those things. How might I suspect that? My horse might have frostbite. What would I look for?
So coldness would be one of the things, you know, is that tissue. And I always kind of go back to their foot to control, to be when I'm trying to think, you know, is this horse is we'll just use ear as an example, or the other day I checked a horse's sheath to see if it may be having some frostbite. So I'll always go back to the feet, because it seems like the blood flow there kind of would tell you what the extremities are up to. So I'll go feel their foot, say, okay, what does that feel like? Then go up to their ear and say, does the ear feel a lot colder? Then that would worry me if it felt inordinately, I shouldn't use such high words with more than two syllables, colder from the ear to the foot. I think, well, that's a little bit worrisome, because he should be maintaining that blood flow better. And then is there pain when you feel that area? Is the horse painful? Because, you know, frostbite, they're generally going to show those two things, where, you know, if it's just a cold day, it may feel cold, but the horse shouldn't show any pain. You may see swelling too, because of that decreased blood flow, and you know, the fluid can't get back into the circulation.
So you go out.
And color change. I should say color change.
Yeah, which is harder to tell on your horses. So whenever you're going out and it's a frigid, nasty weather, you're worried about your senior citizen, and you go out there and you go, oh boy, his ears are very, very chilly, and he is unusually upset about me fussing with his ears. He usually doesn't mind. What's my next step?
Well, then we get decide, you know, just can we bring the horse? If there's a worry of it and the horse is showing discomfort, then how do we get them out of the cold? So do they have a windbreak, or are they wet where they need to come in out of the weather? And then, you know, if they're not wearing a blanket, then that would be a time to think about a blanket to try and just make that core body temperature be higher or maintain it better and potentially help the extremities stay a bit warmer.
Okay, so we're going back to that core body temperature by helping the core body temperature comfortably and easily stay normal versus stressing and struggling to stay normal. We're allowing the body to naturally improve the blood flow back towards those extremities.
Yes, and it depends a little bit on size too. Like, you may worry about it more in a mini than you would an adult normal size horse.
Yeah, it's a because tiny little thing.
Because really the smaller animals have a greater surface area compared to their body weight than a larger animal. So because of that greater surface area, they're more likely to lose heat.
Yeah. So we've brought our horse over, and we've brought him into the barn, and we're going to walk him around a little bit, help him warm, put a nice big puffy warm blanket on him. We're going to use ears as an example because it's easy. Would it be a good idea to rub his ears, put mittens on his ears, pour some hot water on his ears? What should we do?
So I think rubbing them, putting something on there, you know, water, because that's going to promote heat loss. I probably wouldn't do that. And if one of the responses to heat can also be blood vessel constriction.
Oh, so I would,
as much as possible, let them passively warm themselves by rubbing them or covering them up.
There we go. So at what point is it better call the vet?
You know, for sure, a color change. You know, if you saw that tissue is purpley to, you know, and everybody's seen those pictures where the people get terrible frostbite, starts to turn black.
Yeah, they're icky.
That's they are terrible. That shows there's been significant tissue damage. And so, you know, if they don't respond within an hour or two, then it probably time to have it looked at. But color change would be bad, continued pain would be bad, and then the rest of the horse feels pretty warm, and that tip of that ear still feels really cold, and that would signal there may be something going on blood flow wise.
There we go. Very interesting. So bring him in, help him get that core body temperature comfortably and consistently back to normal, and make sure he's got some forage and plenty of hydration. Can dehydration play a role in susceptibility?
Well, it sure can. You know, it would, an animal would have to be fairly well dehydrated, but still, if they have lower blood volume, is going to be lower perfusion to the rest of the body. So if we're normally hydrated, then hopefully our blood volume is going to be as it should be, which would help keep the tissues perfused and warm.
There we go. Well, fascinating stuff. And as I said, timely, considering that as we record, the entire country seems to be dipping below norms. So thank you again, Dr. B, for stopping by and telling us all about really great horse health topics.
Even under the best circumstances, travel is stressful for horses. We've all been there. stuck on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. You can make the journey knowing that U.S. Rider is there for you. Get peace of mind on the road with U.S. Rider's nationwide 24/7 roadside assistance coverage for both you and your horse. Join today at usrider.org.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
Yes, it's that time of the week again where we cover all the weird things that are happening all over the globe. And you guys are the ones that find it. If you're ever looking through the news and you see something, you're like, that's weird. Email it to me, weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. And poor showing this week, guys. I'd like to give thanks. Usually I've got like 20 names. Now I only have 4. Alyssa, Laureen, Carrie, and Shelley. Thank you guys all for participating this week. So we're going to have to get through this. And there's a one that I'm not quite sure if we covered this one last week, but so many people sent it last week and this week that I'm just going to do it again in case, because I'm sure Lisa hasn't heard it or Jen. So there's a man going through the airport and he walks in the airport and he's got his tickets ready and he's got his phone ready and he's elderly. And he's got his wife and she's in a wheelchair. And so this is in Tenerife South Airport. So this is in Ireland. Okay. So I'm sure I said that wrong. Sorry. Whatever. Y'all can yell at me. Don't care. So he's taking his dear sweet wife, who's in a wheelchair, through the airport security. And he just wheels it through the metal detector. And of course, the metal detector goes off because his wife is in a wheelchair. So all the security comes over and they're like, hi, ma'am. Like, what's going on here? We need you to, you know, we need to patch you down. And she's not responding to him. And then the airport staff became a little concerned because she was not responding to anybody.
Oh, no. And I think I know where this is going. Oh, no.
They realized that she was not breathing. And then the man finally tells the authorities that she died like several hours ago, but he was just trying to get her home. What? It's like Weekend at Bernie's. He should have tied like a string to her arm and had her wave at everybody.
That's actually one of my favorite movies, but holy cow. What was he thinking? Oh my goodness.
The only information I have is local authorities said an investigation is ongoing to determine the circumstances surrounding all of it, I guess. come on, man. Come on. If y'all heard that last week, you know what? You get to hear it again.
So they don't have like an ambulance or something in Ireland that can take her wherever?
I
don't
know.
Or a station wagon or an SUV?
Well, I mean, where were they flying?
That's it. Yeah.
Where was he going?
Yeah.
With his wife in a wheelchair. And how is he going to get her out of the wheelchair and put her in a seat? Like, there's so many questions. This one has more questions than answers.
Yes.
So
yes.
We'll just move on. Okay. So do you believe in like fortune tellers and psychics and things like that?
Sometimes.
Okay. Well, there's a 19-year-old girl and she went to a fortune teller in Thailand and it was like New Year's Day. So she went to this sage and she says that, you know, it's the new year. And this is in Thai. I don't do Thai accents.
Okay.
This is a new year. And I would like to know what you think is going to happen to me in the next year. And this wise fortune teller looks at him and looks at her and says, you will lose something very valuable, very, very valuable to you, unless you pay me some money and I'll make sure you don't lose anything valuable.
Of course.
Uh-huh. So like any normal person, she was like, no, thanks. And she walked away and she got probably about 50 yards and she's like, where's my phone? Where's my phone? And she ran back over to the fortune teller and he's like, I told you you were going to lose something of great value. And she was like, give me my phone. He's like, I don't have your phone. Well, it makes such a scene that all these bystanders come over and they grab his bag and pull it apart. And there's her phone.
Of course it is.
I mean, people are dumb.
Yes.
Yes. That's another one. Just be careful. Okay. Now, and the theme of drugs are bad. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. They make you do really dumb stuff. And in Marion, Louisiana, a person had to call the police and to report a trespassing incident on her property. There's somebody on my property. I need you guys to come send the police. So the deputies arrive in Louisiana at this home and they walk into the backyard and they find a woman swimming in the residence pond, naked.
Oh, okay.
Drugs are bad. So the officers are like, hey, get out of the pond. Get out of the pond. And she goes, I'm a mermaid. Apparently, it was fairly cold. It was winter. It is winter. Yeah. So it's freezing and she can't get out of the pond because she's a mermaid, obviously. So they end up having to go in and get her where she's trying to like leap and flap around like a mermaid. They end up having to grab her and heave her out of the water because it's so cold. They need to evaluate her medically. So they try to take her into the house. At that point, she's not a mermaid anymore, Lisa, because she then charges at the deputy, goes to attack him. What does he do? He pulls out her taser.
Oh, no. Taser.
Down goes the mermaid. She was then arrested and charged with what they say here is several crimes. I love being charged with several crimes. All the information you get. Oh, fantastic. All right. Finally, in the weird news world, Lisa, you've been watching the news like in Tennessee. You ever see like an accident where a tractor trailer spills something across the roadway?
Oh, weekly, yes.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you have seen spilled across the roadway? Because I've done beer. Several times beer has spilled into the roadway. What can you think of?
So here in Tennessee, a couple of years ago, we had a load of chickens dumped downtown, which was fun.
Yep.
That was fun. And then there was a load of rice, bags of rice.
Okay.
Or someplace. And then just, I can't remember exactly where it was, but somewhere here in Middle Tennessee, a whole truckload of eggs.
That's fun.
Yeah. I remember they had to bring the fire trucks out and spray the freeway.
Oh, well, that would be more fortunate than what happened here. Because a recovery crew was summoned to this road in Ireland. It's called the McLaughlin Transport Truck. And unfortunately, as they were traveling to places, and I'm not going to tell you where they were traveling because it'll give it away. Okay. Unfortunately, they were traveling to Portugal and it wound up in a ditch on the side of the road and it broke the tractor trailer in half. And what escaped? 15,000 giant crabs alive crabs. I can see pictures of them. It is bonkers. These people are picking them up and they're the size of freaking footballs, Lisa.
Crabs. Yeah. 15,000 crabs. I cannot imagine.
It is approximately $100,000 worth of seafood that spilled out of the aluminum containers all live and they just scattered. Run!
Well, don't they have to have water to live?
All of it spilled. Oh, everything. It just all the whole thing. They spilled out of their aluminum containers and I guess they were filled with water and then they dumped over and all the crabs just scattered.
Oh my gosh.
The officer said that a team of 10 people had to physically attempt to retrieve the crabs and put them into large bags and reload them. It took hours and they're not even sure if they got them all. So if you're in Ireland and you see a giant football sized crab in Donegal County, then you know what it is. Oh my gosh. They said that 95% of the crabs were recovered almost during the 18-hour recovery effort. So.
But still, 5% of 15,000 is a lot of crabs.
They're out there running around. Be free, boys. Be free. And that is your weird news for the week. Now, keep in mind, if you guys are ever reading the news and you come across something that's like super weird, email it to me, weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. And hopefully we can get it on here and share the weirdness that it may or may not be in your neighborhood. Lisa, as always, thank you for coming on and co-hosting with me. We will be back here on Friday.
Yep.
Pretty sure both of us have a lot of work to do to prep for the Arctic invasion is what they're calling it here.
Yeah, Snowmageddon here. So okay. we'll reconvene on Friday and see what's up.
All right, sounds good. Jen, thank you so much. I hope you got that Prozac on order for me. I appreciate it.
No worries. Hey, auditors, stick around for more.
All right, okay. Spay, neuter, and yelled.